Good morning, everyone. Greet you in Jesus' name this morning. I feel a little bit like a stranger here after being gone all that time. I want to thank y'all for your prayers and support going through the time of losing Mary's mother. Anyway, I'm very thankful to have friends that obviously believe in fellowship and brotherhood, I guess. For a message this morning, I am going to look at the book of Proverbs. Now, we're going to have to pick a topic in Proverbs because Proverbs is full of all kinds of topics. And I was reading through Proverbs recently in my personal devotions, and anyway, along with some recent events, either hearing about them or being involved in them, it occurred to me that Proverbs has a lot to say about human relationships, and all of us are in some form of relationship, or we are, and when I say relationship, I assume that you understand that it means that it's probably got some things to work through, some difficulties, right? Because relationships with other people are really messy. If people would just behave, then it would be okay. But they don't behave. And so we have issues that we face. And sometimes we're in those issues. Sometimes we're the cause of those issues. Sometimes it seems like the other person might be. And then sometimes we're in this unique situation where people are asking our counsel on their relationship issues. And that's really an interesting situation to be in. So anyway, we're just going to stay in Proverbs. Now, the Bible has a lot to say about human relationships, but the proverb writer is probably one of the wisest ways of just putting it into a little saying. And so I have, I don't know, it's a different style of message maybe than what I usually preach, but I'm just going to go through the book of Proverbs, picking out little things to think about as we think about the human relationship needs. And I don't really know what kind of title to give this. Maybe you could just say principles from Proverbs on relationships or something like that. So to start off with, let's go to Proverbs chapter 3. And I'm going to just take them in the order of the book. We're going to start at the beginning of the book and just work our way through and look at about, I think I might have about 20 principles. Something like that. So the first one is in Proverbs chapter 3. And I would like to read some pretty familiar verses starting at verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord, and depart from evil. So the reason I wanted to bring this up, this doesn't actually talk about relationships as such. And yet it's a foundation that we all need to build on, whether we're talking about a personal, just living life and the circumstances that come our way, or in relation to other people. Our understanding will not be something trustworthy unless we know what it is to trust in God and acknowledge Him in our ways. Verse 7 says, to fear the Lord and depart from evil. I think when we put this in the context of relationships or working with other people, our understanding of a situation is always going to be biased. It's going to have an inclination toward our own experiences and our own foundations. And that's just a tiny little piece of any puzzle. And it doesn't matter whose life you're talking about. Our experience, even in our own family, our siblings, or even our children, our personal experience is not nearly enough to give us the wisdom that we need. And so we have to go to some other source and that is in God, trust in the Lord. The wisdom, James tells us, the wisdom that's from above is pure and peaceable and easy to be entreated and all that. And I think we need to understand that wisdom that comes from God is what we need in any situation. And so we need to start there, no matter what we're talking about, whether it's relationships or anything else in life. Let's move down to verse 11 in Proverbs 3. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as the father the son in whom he delighteth. So this is number two. We need to understand that our life, our character, is going to be refined through hardships. We talked a little bit about that in Sunday school this morning, didn't we? We spend most of our life trying to run away from hardships. And some of them we probably should. It's probably okay to take an aspirin to get rid of a headache. That's probably all right. But there are some things that you just can't run away from. And if you see people who have spent their lives trying to run away from the correcting of the Lord, it doesn't matter where they land, God's going to be there. And we have a way of saying it. We say they take themselves with them. We say that sometimes when we watch people move from one problem to the next problem to the next problem, and they try to move across the whole country to get to a different state, because surely those people will behave. And they get there, and guess what? It's the same story. God might actually be trying to do something with those people. And we need to recognize that not only in them, but we also need to recognize it in our own lives. God knows exactly what we need, and he will deal with us according to that. And so whenever there's something in my life that needs to go, God is going to bring some kind of chastening into my life to try to help me understand that needs to go. And I can listen to that, or I can become the kind of person that's intolerable to be around and keep leaving. Those are two options. We can keep leaving the relationships, or we can face them and become the kind of person that God wants us to be. Number three, Proverbs chapter 6. Verses 20 through 23. Again, these aren't necessarily in order of importance or any kind of other thing. We're just going through the book and picking them out as we come across them. But in Proverbs chapter 6, look at verses 20 through 23. My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. When thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life. I believe these verses teach us that respect for parental, God-ordained authority is imperative, no matter what the situation is. We live in a time that seems as if authority is a bad word, and it might be in some situations. And I know that those of us who are fathers or pastors or whatever position of having people under us, as it were, I don't like that language, but I don't know what other words to use there. It's tricky to talk about authority. For a dad to tell his children that they have to listen to him because he's the dad, that's kind of like, we don't want to have those conversations. And so this subject is hard to talk about, but notice what the writer says to us. When we live under authority, the way God designed it to work, it becomes a lamp and a light. How many people have struggled around? How many times have we struggled around in darkness because we have ignored proper direction from proper authority? And when we're in relationship struggles, and maybe we're counseling someone in relationship struggles, one of the things that needs to be examined and talked about is what kind of respect and what kind of direction are you willing to give and accept from your God-given authority, whether it's your parents, whether it's your preachers, whether it's your husband, whether it's your whoever it is. Fill in the blank. Because until we recognize that need to bring ourselves into subjection to our authority, darkness exists, and we don't have a direction anymore. And I'm going to stand on that, even though there's probably situations where we could point to and say, well, they shouldn't listen to that person because he's that way, and so on and so forth. I don't know about that. The Bible says what it says. Let's move to Proverbs chapter 10, number 4. Fourth principle here. Proverbs 10, and I'm going to read just one verse here. Verse 12. Hatred stirreth up strifes, but love covereth all sins. Now, we need to talk about this a little bit, don't we? Because we don't like to think about covering sins. So how can we think about this verse in a way that doesn't mean that we watch someone murder somebody and then we go on and say, well, I love that person so much, I'm not going to reveal that. Like, that's the extreme of this. But it could be read that way. What I think is being communicated here, though, is when you compare the last part of the verse, love covering sins, with the first part of the verse, what does hatred do? Well, hatred stirs things up. It tries to get more going. So if I really am struggling in a relationship and I have lots of hatred towards somebody, then I'm okay with bringing up more and more and more stuff to just keep that fire burning. I just want the issues to keep boiling over because that's what's in my heart. I want that. Whereas love does all that it can to bring reconciliation and to stop stirring things up. What can I do to actually resolve situations? What can I do to bring peace and not strife? And I think that might help us understand what verse 12 is saying here. And it's helpful when we're in relationship struggles to think about, am I doing something? Am I saying things that are stirring things up? And of course, if we're counseling someone who's in relationship struggles, this would be something to examine. What are you doing that needles the other person? What could you do different that might actually bring peace and not strife to the situation? Proverbs chapter 13, number 5. Verse 20. Proverbs 13:20. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. This is a really simple principle. It's so simple that it's profound. And that is simply this: you become like the people you're around. So if you're around agitators, if you're around disrespectful people, if you're around hateful people, if you're around people that want to be evil, you're probably going to become like that. And your relationships are going to struggle because of that. It's just a law of life. And what's it say? A wise person, or a person that walks with wise people, are going to be wise. So if you want wisdom, you hang out with wise people. But if you hang out with fools, there's destruction for you. I don't even need to say any more than that. It's so simple. And when we're facing relationship issues, maybe one of the things we can think about is, what kind of people are we around? Are we around people that will enhance behavior, or are we around people that will make it worse? Number 6. Let's go to Proverbs 14. Proverbs 14, verse 17. He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated. This is simply pointing out that anger makes it almost impossible, if not impossible, to make wise decisions. And of course, this will affect relationships. And it affects a lot of things, but in the context of human relationships, it's very obvious that anger is going to make poor decisions in those relationships. And I don't need to say any more than that. Skipping over then to Proverbs 15 for number 7, verse 1, tied to that, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. We all know this. We all know that a gentle answer, a gentle response can break down accusations. But the hardest thing to do when being accused with grievous words is to give a soft answer. It's very easy to respond in kind, but it doesn't lead to peace. Number 8, jumping down to verse 12 of the same chapter, Proverbs 15:12. A scorner loveth not one that reproveth him, neither will he go unto the wise. Now this is interesting to think about what Proverbs writer is saying. Someone who is full of scorn will hate you for trying to reprove him. That's what it says. He loveth not one that reproveth him. And so, if you want to know whether you're a scorner or not, think about how you respond to someone who reproves you. If you hate them and cut them out of your life, then you would fit this category, or I would fit this category. If we're working with someone and we try to give them a very reasonable reproof to help them become better people, and they refuse to hear that and they hate you for it, then you know what kind of person you're dealing with. These people purposely avoid wisdom. Look what he says. Neither will he go into the wise. They don't even want to do anything different. They just like their life and they don't mind being the kind of people that destroy themselves. It's what it seems to say about people that the Bible calls scorners. Number 9, Proverbs 16, verse 2. Proverbs 16:2, all the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes, but the Lord weigheth the spirits. So this verse teaches us that we are masters at justifying our own behavior. We need to remember this about ourselves when we're in relationship struggles, whether it's something very personal or whether we're counseling someone who's faced with relationship struggles. We need to know that the person we are talking to will always have a reason for doing what they did. Always. And it's always a good reason. Someone told me one time, and it's true, it's not a proverb, but it could be a proverb, and that is that nobody does what they think is stupid. So you can be sure that even if you are witnessing someone do something really, really stupid in your mind, they have a reason and they have a justification for doing it. The ways of a man are clean in their own eyes. It's just true. And it's something that we need to remember about ourselves, but also when we're listening to stories. The reasons that person gives make sense to them. And it's just human nature. Number 10, same chapter, verses 23 down. Proverbs 16:23, the heart of the wise teacheth his mouth and addeth learning to his lips. Pleasant words are as in honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Now, verse 25, we often take by itself, but I wonder if it's okay to tie it back to the two verses that I just read. So wise people will speak wise things, and they will try to have understanding in their words. They will try to have pleasant words that build people up. That seems to be set as the opposite of what we think is right. You see, often we think that it's better to use harsh words or forceful words or maybe even ignorant words to prove our point. That's usually the way we want to approach conflict. We want to get our way by using intimidation, by using harsh words. But that way that seems right unto us will lead to death. I don't know if I'm doing injustice to that verse or not, but it seems to me that you could take that unit of verses and read it that way. That the way that seems right to us when it comes to proving our point might not actually be the right way. Instead, we need to take time and learn wisdom. Number 11, moving to Proverbs chapter 18. Proverbs 18 and verse 2 kind of ties in what we just read about getting our own point across there in Proverbs 16. But in 18:2, a fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself. All right, now the old English here makes this meaning just a little bit obscure, but I think it would be okay to read this. A fool does not have any delight in wisdom or understanding. He only cares that his heart is expressed. Something like that. When you read some other translations, it kind of brings that idea out. So what's going on here? What's going on here is that a person who only cares that his opinion gets out there can be labeled as a fool. And these people are usually people that speak quickly, and they don't. They just want their own opinion out there, and they're not willing to listen to gain understanding. And when you're speaking to these people, sometimes I get the sense that when I'm speaking to certain people that they're not actually hearing what you're saying. They're actually just waiting till you quit talking so that they can say what they think. I wonder if that might be the kind of people that this verse is talking about. And actually, I know what it's like to do this, too. It's pretty easy to just say, would you all shut up so that I can say what actually needs to be said. And that's a foolish way to relate to people. It's much wiser to listen and try to actually delight in understanding what that person is saying. Even if they're totally wrong, at least you can understand why they're wrong before you start talking, right? It's way better than to just make sure that your opinion is out there. All right, jumping down now, number 12, verse 5 of chapter 18. Same chapter, verse 5. It is not good to accept the person of the wicked, to overthrow the righteous in judgment. So what this is saying is that if you're in the position to make some kind of judgment or call about who or whatever should be believed, if you know a person to be a wicked person and you know another person to be a righteous person, it is wrong to condemn a righteous person at the word of an unrighteous person. That's what this verse is telling us. Now, there's other places in the Bible that say that if it's in the mouth of two or three witnesses, that's another story. This is talking about the word of two people. And if they're disagreeing and we decide to come down on the side of the wicked person just because we don't like the righteous person for some reason, we have done wrong. It is not good to listen to the accusations of a wicked person against a righteous person. And so, again, if there's two or three witnesses, then of course this all goes away. but we need to think about it in the context that it's given. Number 13, jumping down to verse 13. He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and shame unto him. This is very simple. In fact, I might read another one, number 14, verse 17. He that is first in his own cause seemeth just, but his neighbor cometh and searcheth him out. So these two verses kind of go together. They kind of give the same principle, and that is that when you hear one person tell a story, verse 13 says, if you answer it before you hear it, it will bring shame, and it's foolishness to do that. And so, verse 17, the first person you hear always has a way of making it sound like it's right. And it goes back to what we were saying about a person's way being clean in his own eyes, right? This all ties together at this point, especially if we're called on to make any kind of judgment in a situation. When we are listening to someone, we hear their justifications, we hear their story, and of course it makes sense from their perspective. And if we're sympathetic listeners, we will hear them and it will make sense to us. And if we make a judgment based on the first story we hear, I'm going to say it's always wrong, or at least not complete, for sure. Because there's always at least two sides to every single story. And we can see this in kind of a cartoon or a caricature when it's our children. Whenever little people have their little grievances with each other and they come and they tell mom or they tell dad about something that one of their brothers or sisters did. And hopefully parents are wise enough to say, yeah, but what did you do? Or, you know, tell me the other side of the story. Or they call the other child and you get two sides of the story. And the truth is, once you hear both sides of the story, it's often harder to decide what kind of punishment needs to be dealt out than if you would have just gone with the first story. But it's a good way to be unjust. Now, that's working with children. When we're working with older people, we, as adults, we get very, very good at making sure that our story sounds really, really good. And we might even throw things in there when we're talking to somebody that we want to gain their sympathy. We might even say things like, yeah, I know I didn't do everything right, but we never actually say what we didn't do right. We just make sure that you know that I'm humble enough to at least admit that I probably made some mistakes. And I'm still doing that to gain your sympathy. The whole thing is rigged to get you to agree with me until the other person comes along and says what they think. And so when we're in these positions, it is better to be quiet and hear as many sides as we can hear, even though it will complicate the story 10 times. It just does. Number 15, Proverbs chapter 20, verse 5. Proverbs 25. Counsel in the heart of man is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. Have you ever heard that the first reason a person gives is not the real reason? People will teach you this in sales pitches and stuff like that. If you're a salesman and someone tells you that they don't want to buy from you, and they will usually give some reason. And I'm told from books I've read and seminars I've listened to and things like that, that that's not the real reason. That is not the real reason the person's not buying from you, at least rarely. And so you need to find out, if you're going to be effective at selling your product, you need to find out what the real reason is. And it might be the third reason, or it might be the fourth reason. If you're wise and patient, you will get to the real reason sometime. But 9 times out of 10, it's not the first reason. And if you take the first reason and you leave and you correct your sales pitch based on that reason, you're actually barking up the wrong tree. It's the same thing in all other relationships. Whenever you're in some kind of struggle, somebody's avoiding you or somebody's trying to do something, then you try to find out why. It's going to take more than the first reason, likely. Few people are bold and blunt enough to say the real reason first. If someone is troubled by something, maybe you're in a position where someone is asking for help and they say, I'm just struggling with something, whatever it is, depression or fear or whatever, and you ask them, well, why? The first reason probably isn't the real reason. And so to be wise counselors, to be people that care about other people in relationship, we probably need to take more time. And verse 5 says that it's a man of understanding. People of understanding draw out what's really going on in the heart of a person. And you can think about this. You can say, well, that's not me. That's not really the way it is. Think about it. I certainly know what it's like to give a reason that isn't the real reason just to get the person off your back, just to get out of the situation, just to get away from whatever it is. I know what that's like. And it actually usually leads to more problems if there's ongoing relationships with that person. Anyway, so think about that. Whether you're the one giving the reason or whether you're the one trying to find the reason. I think we're ready for number 16. Proverbs chapter 20. Let's go down to verse 22. Verse 22, say not thou, I will recompense evil, but wait on the Lord and he shall save thee. So this is a New Testament concept as well. Romans talks about it, vengeance is mine, I will repay. And it's always based in why we need to just trust God. In relationships, We claim to be non-resistant people. And so we don't... I shouldn't have said in relationships. Let me start out by saying we claim to be non-resistant people. That's the first premise. And so we tend to think of that as we're not going to sue people, we're not going to shoot them with guns, we're not going to beat them up. But when it comes to relationships, we don't always understand what non-resistance actually is. And I certainly know the temptation and how it feels to feel like you have to make sure that somebody understands your side of the story. You have to make sure that your case is heard and defended. And I'm not sure why we feel so strongly about that. Maybe we actually are falsely accused. Jesus was falsely accused. And what he did was stayed so quiet that it infuriated people. We tend to infuriate people by trying to go around and make sure that everybody knows our side is true. Do y'all remember the literature story of this piece of string? Y'all remember that story? The story of the man that was accused of stealing a wallet when all he did was bend over and pick up a piece of string. There was a missing wallet, and he was accused of stealing it. And somebody saw him bend over in the street, and to his dying day, his dying words were, it was just a piece of string. He could not let it go that he was falsely accused of stealing the wallet. Says something about his character, probably. And I wonder sometimes if that might be something we should think about. But God's truth, the truth of any situation, will be vindicated sometime. We don't actually need to do it. And that's hard. That's hard to live. Number 17, Proverbs 25. Proverbs 25, verses 8 through 10. Go not forth hastily to strive, lest thou know not what to do in the end thereof, when thy neighbor hath put thee to shame. Debate thy cause with thy neighbor himself, and discover not a secret to another, lest he that heareth it put thee to shame, and thine infamy turn not away. Since we are quick to believe the best about our case, we might be tempted to make sure that we get our story out there first. Now, this is actually in a legal context. In other words, somebody's going to court, I believe. And we would say we don't do that, of course. And so one lesson would be this is a good reason not to sue people, or to try to make sure your legal right is litigated. Because if we're the ones out there making a big noise about our legal right, a wise lawyer or judge or counselor might end up finding something totally different, and then, like Proverbs says, we're put to shame. But our tendency is to make sure that we get on top of the story, we get ahead of the story, we make sure that our case is heard. But it could actually end up being a bigger problem for us in the long run. These verses are teaching us that. And of course, if we were taking it to the courts, it would even be worse. Jumping down, number 18, to verse 15. By long forbearing is a prince persuaded, and a soft tongue breaketh the bone. Now, when I read this verse, the word forbearing already sounds like a long time, but the writer decided to put long in front of forbearing. So this sounds like a really, really long time. How long do you put up with people? How long do I have to put up with people? How long do I have to try to endure a situation? Well, probably longer than I want. And of course, kind and soft words help to break down barriers that have been built. I wonder sometimes if in our modern world, things like long forbearing and the process of breaking down barriers isn't made harder because we can communicate so quickly with all kinds of technology, that it might actually make things worse instead of better, even though we think we're forbearing for a long time. That's something just to think about. But the principle there is that patience and softness can do more than impatience and being harsh. Well, number 19, Proverbs 27, verses 5 and 6. Open rebuke is better than secret love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. We are confused enough about life that sometimes we would prefer the kisses of an enemy than the truth spoken by a friend. I don't know what more to say about that, other than when we understand what a true friend is, that does two things. First of all, it makes us thankful for people that are true friends, and it also should help us to become a true friend. And somehow we need to understand that a friend who is true, who is truly faithful, will at times hurt us. Probably not on purpose, but they will sometimes. And when we're in relationship struggles, we need to think about whether that's happening or not. Not all enemies kiss, by the way. Some enemies just are enemies. They say things, and they're not even trying to pretend not to be your enemy. So that doesn't really count here. But it would be better to surround ourselves with people who are going to be there for us, even though it means that they're going to say things sometimes that rebuke us, than to be surrounded by people that are saying, yes, 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 you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right, and they really don't care about you. So that's something to think about. And if somebody's in a situation where they feel like they just are struggling and they're asking for counsel because everybody seems to be saying things that hurt them, maybe a question that they could be confronted with is, are these people actually trying to help you? Are they your friends and you're just resisting that? Maybe that would be something to think about. Anyway, the last verse I have here, number 20, is in Proverbs 29, verse 1. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. There's not a lot to be said here, because the verse kind of just stands on its own. But when you think about all of the things we've been looking at in relationships, if we find ourselves in a place where we refuse counsel, there will be a day that nothing will get through. And I don't even understand that necessarily, but it seems as if this would tie into verses in the New Testament that talk about how their consciences just are so defiled they don't even work anymore and stuff like that. I don't know how all that works. But I think it makes it important for us to think about refusing counsel and what that will do to us in the end. In conclusion, I don't really have much to say other than these principles have stood the test of time. And we will either honor these principles and flourish, or we will dishonor the principles and, like verse 1 here of 29, end up being destroyed because we're just not open to that. So let's not be that kind of person. Let's be the people that are open to counsel, open to reproof, open to wisdom, trusting in God's wisdom, and it will go a long way in helping us relate better to each other.